So I'm absolutely delighted to be joined on the line by the one and the only Phil Coulter. Phil, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Nice to chat to you as always.
And it's
I'm in good shape for an aging rocker, I suppose. I'm still upright and above ground, so I'm thankful for that.
That's always a bonus, I suppose, and it's a great way to describe yourself, an aging rocker. But I'm you know, we've so much to talk to you about today because you're going on tour again in your new tour, but you've got 23 dates across Ireland. You know, you're mighty to be embarking on such a tour.
Well, the last count, or I think there's new dates being added all the time. The last count was more like 30 something, between 30 and 40. So yes, I'm a glutton for punishment.
You certainly are. So it's gone up since the press release even, which is brilliant. Yeah. So you're obviously in very, very big demand, Phil. But
thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God indeed. And I've got just so much that I'd like to speak with you about before we talk to you about the actual tour dates. But
right.
You know, I'm blown away by your enthusiasm, and you know, the thing that really stood out for me is your new song, well, your new version of your song Steal Away, that you recorded in Ukrainian of all things. And can you just maybe tell our listeners a little bit how all that came about?
Well, it's first of all, I have to tell you that in all of my years and all of my projects over 55, 56 years, this is certainly one of the most moving, one of the most inspirational, and one of the most heartwarming things I've ever been involved in. I'll tell you the story very briefly. I had a call, say 3-4 months ago, springtime, from a chap in County Cavan, Terry. Terry works for one of those government agencies whose job is to resettle and look after the Ukrainian refugees. And there happens to be quite a big contingent of them in Cavan. And he called me to say that amongst his Ukrainians up there, they're a very musical, very musically active group, and they seem to have gravitated towards Steal Away as a song that they had kind of adopted. I was completely blown away at that because, well, I wrote that song really during the troubles in the north of Ireland, but as he explained, listen, Phil, they can relate so well to the lyrics and all that, steal away and start anew and make a new beginning. We leave behind the city streets, the gloom and desolation. So he said it's just relevant, as irrelevant to these people as it was to the people in the north all those years ago. So that was the start-off point. If you fast forward the tape, I decided, well, let's take this as far as we can. So in conjunction with some of his colleagues who look after the other Ukrainian communities, north, south, east and west, we put together a choir, a 40-piece choir of largely ladies, women from all those different Ukrainian communities. And we got them together to rehearse Steal Away in English and in Ukrainian. And I thought, well, to pay respect to these people and to enter into the spirit of it, Phil, you're going to have to learn some Ukrainian. So I had to learn Steal Away, the chorus of Steal Away in Ukrainian, which was a bit of an ask. But it was, I mean, I was fluent in Ukrainian for 16 bars. You know,
that's absolutely brilliant. And I've listened to it. It's fantastic. You sing it as if you were a natural.
Well, you see, they say that musicians or people with a good ear are better at languages than others. It would be one of my interests. I mean, I speak fluent French and I speak decent Spanish and a bit of Italian, whatever. So musicians tend to have that facility. Anyway, that was a start-off point. We rehearsed. It was a glorious experience when, well, these ladies, when congregated in Dublin, some of them, I mean, the ladies from Kerry, for example, got on a bus at 4:30 in the morning to come up to Dublin to rehearse, and they're coming from north, south, east and west. And just that first coming together was one of the most moving things I'd experienced, because you could see just the joy and the light in their eyes, meeting fellow Ukrainians, chatting away and drinking coffee and looking at these new surroundings of a rehearsal space, knowing they were going to make a recording. It was just so different. I mean, for me, that's my workplace, that's what I do. But I realized, wait a minute, for these people, it is such a change, even physically, it's such a change. Some of these women will be living maybe in a hotel room with a couple of kids or in a hostel or whatever it might be. Here they are now in a rehearsal space with fellow Ukrainians singing a song in Ukrainian and in English. And just that, you know, that was excitement to them. It brought some light into an otherwise pretty kind of dark existence, I would think. It gave them something really to give them a bit of a lift, to be honest.
Of course. And there's something joyful about singing as a group together. And and to have somebody, you know, that, as you described very, very eloquently there, about people who may be just living in one room, to meet fellow, you know, people from Ukraine and being able to sing in their own language, it must have been such an electric atmosphere to be in.
Well, I confess, there were tears in my eyes when I heard those ladies sing Steal Away in Ukrainian, because I'm thinking, those girls singing these words, steal away and make a new beginning, they're no doubt thinking of fathers, brothers, and sons, uncles, whatever, who are fighting in the front line in Ukraine. That's the reality. I mean, it's still going on.
Indeed, yes.
Some of those women, they were left with nothing. I mean, they didn't come to Ireland to kind of sponge off the system, you know. They came to Ireland just to try and stay alive. I mean, some of them said that their homes and all that they possessed, all of their worldly possessions, were reduced to rubble by Russian strikes. So, you know, it's so sad. We all tend to become a little numb to the statistics, you know. We hear about the war going on and grinding on. And, you know, you do become a little bit insensitive to all those statistics. But, you know, when confronted by the reality of the human situation, these women with family members who are still getting bombed and shot at and killed in Ukraine, and, you know, it was just, for me, one of the most inspirational of all of my experiences, just that emotion that was enveloping me. And you're 100% right about the positive energy of singing together. That's a well-known fact. But for them, it was that positivity was trebled by the fact that it was, you know, in English, in Ukrainian, and it was in an environment which was, I suppose, to them, very different and quite exciting. The fact they're going to make a record,
absolutely, something completely different. But people tend to show up for you to sing as well, because when you got the freedom of the city of Derry last October, there was over 2,000 people showed up to sing "The Town I Love So Well." So you're used to having people sing at you in large numbers.
Well, yeah, that was a memorable weekend, I have to tell you, because on the Friday, I was given the freedom of the city of Derry. Now, in my business, you know, you're in line for awards of one sort or another, which a Grammy award or a gold album or, you know, records number one on the chart. But to be given an award from your own place, voted on by your own people, was extra special. I must say that was particularly moving. And then the icing on the cake was the following afternoon, on a drizzly afternoon, to have like nearly 3,000 people, ordinary Joes. I mean, we're not talking about choirs or trained singers. We're talking about ordinary Joes, mums and dads, grannies and granddads, school children showing up there to sing five verses of "The Town I Love So Well." It blew me away that they knew all the words.
Yeah, I'm sure they could sing them back to you, no problem whatsoever. But going on about, you know, people singing your songs in large numbers, of course, I have to confess I'm a huge rugby fan, so I've been lapping up every single match that Ireland have played so far, plus all the others. And of course, you've written Ireland's Call. And have you been to any of the rugby matches? Have you been to France or have you been to rugby matches? How does it feel?
I would have loved to have been in France when we were playing South Africa. I would love to have been part of that, because even watching it on TV, I have to say, even for an old war horse like myself, I got goose pimples when I heard that song echo out around the stadium. I have to say, it was quite inspiring. And the fact that every one of the players, every one of the squad were building it out. I had a smile when I saw Bundy Aki.
Yes.
I thought, fair play to you, Bundy. I love your style.
Yes, we all love his style. I think he's doing really well this time. I reckon he's going to get player of the tournament, but that's just, keep that under your hat. But when you saw this year, of course, you've worked with so many different artists throughout your career, but maybe for me, a woman of a certain generation, Sinead O'Connor would have been one of my heroes growing up in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
And you worked, of course, with her and Universal Mother, but how sad was to see her, you know, losing her this year, you know, for yourself? You'd known her personally.
Oh, it was tragic. It was tragic. I mean, you know, she was always fragile, Sinead. I used to say that people's impression of Sinead, whatever about all the other stuff, like tearing up the picture of the Pope or adopting these various causes, have been very vocal about this, that, and the other. Essentially, people tended to forget what made Sinead famous in the first place, which was that glorious voice, that glorious God-given voice, and her ability. For a songwriter, it's a real joy when you have a voice like that to breathe life into your songs. So, I mean, I consider myself to be doubly blessed that a song like "Scorn Not His Simplicity" has been sung by two of the greatest voices this country ever produced, Sinead and Luke Kelly. Luke had got that same ability to invest a song with sincerity and life. His version is so totally different from Sinead's, who's, you know, her, as a female version, much more fragile and much more sensitive. But, you know, those are two versions that I would be very, very proud of. I think Sinead was one of the great talents that we produced. Sadly, she had a troubled life, and when she was working with me, I always thought that part of my job was to give her a hug before we started work and just make her feel, you know, safe and protected and secure. She was she had that fragility which never left her, you know, right up until the end. God rest her soul.
Indeed. And, you know, talking to you, you sound so full of energy. And where do you get your energy from? Even during lockdown, you didn't let that sort of slow you down. You had your lockdown lounge where you'd be posting on Facebook every week and posting new tracks. Yeah. Like, did that a way to cope during COVID with the lockdown?
Entirely. I mean, this was a question where it was some of the younger guys in my team said, Phil, the only way you're going to keep in touch with your fans, your believers, your followers, is online. Now, I have to tell you, you're talking here to an old dog who had to learn a lot of new tricks because I was not by any means a techie. So we decided that, okay, Saturday afternoons, let's do a live broadcast on Facebook, call it the Lockdown Lounge. Now, it wasn't without its trials and tribulations because for the first few attempts, I was coming out sideways. You know, whatever I did wrong, pressing the wrong buttons, my broadcasts were coming out all upside down or sideways, whatever. But we got a handle on the tech end of it, and it was a glorious way for me to stay active, you know, to stay in touch with my followers. And on a very basic level, to let them know that I was still active, you know, still productive and still alive. And people appreciated the fact that, you know, the zing had gone out of there was no live entertainment, the kind of buzz had gone out of all of that. So it was a different way for them to experience the music. And, you know, they would have their requests. What I did experience was that, this was new to me, that the audience for that, were not just my audience in Ireland, but God, they were coming from like South America and Korea and South Africa and God knows where. I mean, I even had a fan group in Buenos Aires.
Amazing.
So I learned from that whole online world, that online audience is a very different one. And it was, I learned a lot. And it kind of, you know, it gave me a focal point when there was no recording being done, there was no touring being done. It was give me something to look forward to on a Saturday, and give me a focal point to, you know, you use the week to kind of prepare what I was going to do on the Saturday. Just kept the old brain active as well. And let me tell you, at this stage in my life, I have to keep the brain active before I develop something that kind of, like, you know, it's going to be a bit too forgetful.
Well, you're an absolute inspiration, because between learning Ukrainian and learning how to use Facebook and reaching out to new audiences all the time, it seems to me that you're constantly willing to learn and to change, which is so fabulous to hear all the time. We can all take a leaf out of your book.
Well, you know, the biggest challenge in the entertainment world is to survive. You know, a lot of people get lucky and have one hit, but the highway of the music industry is littered with the carcasses of one-hit wonders. You know, who could never follow through. The challenge is always, you know, to stay relevant and to stay active. So you have to learn to reinvent yourself. You know, I mean, my first experience of success was with the Eurovision Song Contest, with Puppet on a String and Congratulations and all kinds of everything, whatever. If back then I had thought, that's it, I'm a Eurovision specialist, you know, and that's what I do, I'd have been dead in the water. More recently, if I'd done when I was doing the Bay City Rollers and doing all those teeny bopper things, and I thought, that's it, I'm a teeny bopper songwriter, this is what I do, again, I would have been dead in the water. And if I hadn't embraced working with the likes of the Dubliners or the Fury Brothers, Liam Clancy, Planksty, embraced that whole world of Irish music, you know, my life would have been a lot lesser, and my output would have been a lot lesser. So you have to be open to new changes, you have to be open to challenges, and you mustn't be afraid to jump in and try something new. You can't be asleep at the wheel. In the music business, treading water is not an option. You know, you can't tread water. You just have to keep action. You have to keep kicking. You have to keep kind of swimming forward. That's the truth.
So, and you are indeed, because you're kicking off, as you said, now 30 plus, possibly 40 dates all around Ireland. And you're starting, of course, in the real capital down here in Cork, aren't you, on the 5th of October?
100%. You know what I'm going to tell you? All these dates, it's a kind of a Cork sandwich, because our first date is in Cork City on the 5th of October. Our last date is in Bantry on the 31st of December. So it's a Cork sandwich. There's a lot of other stuff in between, north, south, east and west. But we start and finish in Cork. I'm really looking forward to getting back on the road and kicking off. And we haven't played the Opera House in Cork since pre-COVID, I suppose. So it's great to get back there, because it was one of my favourite stomping grounds. I have some great memories of playing the Opera House.
And it's just such a pleasure to speak with you. And, you know, you don't sound at all as if you have any intention of slowing down. You're constantly, you know, doing something new, and you really are an inspiration. So if somebody wants to find out some more, what's the best place to go? Do you have your website, or what is the best place to do?
The website, and I'm pretty active on Facebook as well, just updating stuff. But the website is always a good source, because all of the dates are on there, all of the gigs, the venues, the dates, the times, all of that kind of stuff. That's always a good resource. Any changes, any updates, we put them on Facebook. You see, now that I'm a bit of an expert.
An expert. You are, as they say, the young people would be saying, you're an influencer now, Phil. You're an influencer.
Oh, God forbid. But there's a friend of mine whose daughter is a secondary school teacher, and he told me a story that she was talking to her kids about their careers and what they wanted to be in future life, and at least half of them put their hands up and said they wanted to be an influencer.
Oh, Lord God.
Another bunch of them wanted to be a YouTuber. I mean, whatever happened to the real world?
I know.
Happened to have a career doing real stuff?
Well, you need to go and talk to these kids and tell them how they have to, you know, they can't be just a one-hit wonder. They have to keep reinventing themselves as they go along in life.
Entirely right, because here's the bottom line. Nobody is entitled to anything. You know, the most dangerous mistake that talented people make is that believing that because they're talented, that they're entitled to make a living. You're entitled to nothing. The talent only gets you into the game. It's all the hard work and the sticking with it, the resilience that keeps you in the game. That's the lesson, you know. You're entitled to nothing.
And on that note, it's such good advice. Phil, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Best of luck on the tour and sure, keep in touch. I like the cork sandwich view now, that's in my head. Phil Coulter, the Phil Coulter cork sandwich. We're going to go with that image now. But thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
A pleasure. Enjoy the chat. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.